Today is the third of 4 weeks during this season of Epiphany at this beginning of the year that my sermons are highlighting this connection of Epiphany to another spiritual concept called Theophany. And you might recall that Epiphany means appearance or manifestation, a kind of aha moment of divine revelation, certainly in a religious context. Theophany means the appearance of a God, that a perceptible manifestation of somehow an ineffable or invisible spiritual God is made manifest in the physical world. And in those terms, it seems very appropriate to understand that our long-standing Christian claim that God was made incarnate in Jesus Christ is, in fact, a claim of theophany, that God was made physical, seeable, hearable, touchable in this decisive and sustained way. So these few sermons are alternating between Epiphany stories and Theophany stories. The first week, you may recall, was that famous, perhaps the most famous Theophany story of Moses, who turns aside to see that curious sight of a bush that was burning but not consumed, where he met God and was called to be God's agent of deliverance to liberate the Hebrews from their slavery in Egypt. Last week, Jesus calling his first disciples along the Sea of Galilee, an epiphany story, a traditional epiphany story, because somehow in hearing Jesus make this direct and simple invitation to follow me, that those first disciples somehow recognized something of God that they could not resist, and they dropped everything and followed immediately. Moses at the burning bush, Jesus along the Sea of Galilee. They change the world because they change our lives. Today is another Theophany story, an appearance of God story. And it is one of the earliest in our biblical tradition, long before the Moses story. This story of how it is God visited Abraham in the midday desert heat at the oasis of the Oaks of Mamre. Now, whether God was only one of these three travelers and the two others angels, or somehow God was embodied in three visibly distinct figures, is ambiguous in this story and in the text, even as it later unfolds. And it's also unclear whether Abraham immediately was aware that these guests are holy, which does become clear as the story goes on. It is made clear in the story, in the very first sentence, to us that these were just not mere strangers or travelers. This was God who had come to visit. And it's Abraham's response to these visitors that is central to the story. It is not only among the earliest Theophany stories, it is probably the first hospitality story in Scripture. And I think that is no coincidence. No coincidence, an early Theophany story is our first hospitality story. Hospitality is arguably the central ethic of our entire biblical tradition. Kindness and care extended towards others, particularly toward a stranger, is highlighted throughout our scriptures. From this scene that we hear in Genesis today, through numerous admonitions in Jewish law and the prophets to care for foreigners and those you call alien in your midst, to Jesus who answers the question, "Who is my neighbor?" and tells that story of the Good Samaritan. And perhaps the ultimate Jesus statement on the topic, to offer a cup of water to welcome the least of these, is welcoming me. To welcome Christ, that divine presence hidden in the other, in the stranger. Hospitality and welcome, especially to the stranger, to one who is unknown, one who is unlike, is the core biblical ethic. Now, one of those reasons is surely that in the ancient Near Eastern desert, you had to rely upon the kindness of strangers. With climate and conditions that were always challenging, even hostile to human life, with a limited ability to carry enough food and water when you traveled, to welcome someone, to welcome a stranger that arrived in your camp, in your town, at your doorstep, to offer them food and water and a place to rest, was more than just a nicety or a courtesy. It was life-saving. It was a way of recognizing common humanity also, because you had needed, and you were again going to need that same life-saving hospitality from others. This story of these three holy guests at Mamre and Abraham's extravagant hospitality here in Genesis chapter 19 is an important and intentional, I will add, intentional contrast to what comes in the very next chapter, Genesis chapter 19. These same three visitors, if you don't recall, these same three visitors leave Abraham's camp and go to Sodom and Gomorrah. And when you hold chapter 18 and 19 together, the actual meaning of that troublesome story about the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah becomes even clearer that it is not about same-sex behavior. Later references in the Bible also make it clear. The, quote, sin of Sodom is that they arrogantly refused to welcome strangers with care and hospitality, with threats of violence and rape. These guests were met with inhospitality in the extreme. So this contrast of how to treat the stranger, the other who arrives in your midst, this contrast between Abraham's radical welcome with the violent inhospitality when you turn the page to Genesis 19 couldn't be more stark and obvious. It is intentional. You know, in our day, we often consider welcome a social courtesy or hospitality, a nicety that some people are in the business of, hospitality, especially when it's offered by a stranger. We consider it thoughtful or a nicety, not a necessity. Because when did your life last depend upon the kindness or attention of a stranger? Think about it a little more deeply. When did your life last depend upon the attention of a stranger? Did you recently have a medical procedure? How many people, seen or unseen, participated in your care? If you drove to church, who pumped the gas in your car that got you here? If you rode a bus or the MAX, who was your driver? This morning, where did your breakfast come from? I had Greek yogurt the whole way from Greece. Faye, the number one yogurt of Greece. I think we should get something now from Faye, don't you? But who grew? Who harvested? Who made that possible for you and for me? Our lives are actually so interconnected that every day my life and your life depends upon the care and attention of unknown and unnamed strangers. That actually makes me pretty grateful. And when we pause to think of it, it's a wonderful comfort to remember those interconnections. I wonder sometimes in those interconnections that I or we sometimes have the privilege of making assumptions that close me off to recognizing God who shows up right in front of me. As the story in Genesis 18 continues, we left Abraham standing watching his holy guests eat. But as the story continues, before we get to that tragic and stark contrast in Genesis 19, if you know the story, you'll recall there are two really wonderful gems that come next. After the guests refresh themselves, the visitors inquire of Abraham's wife, Sarah. They ask, "What about your wife? Where is she?" And in this conversation, which Sarah overhears, these guests reveal that Sarah, in her old age, both Abraham and Sarah are quite elderly, Sarah is going to have a baby. And this is the one where Sarah laughs out loud at the thought. The welcome, the hospitality that was provided creates a space for this news. The stranger, the other, brings this life-bearing gift and promise. Then, as these holy guests leave the camp, Abraham walks with them for a while, and God reveals the intention to destroy Sodom, which was made in advance, by the way. And in one of the most amusing and peculiar conversations in Scripture, Abraham negotiates directly with God, starting with, "Well, you certainly wouldn't destroy a city if there are 50 righteous in Sodom." That's the starting point. And Abraham negotiates God down to 10. "You wouldn't do it for 50. Oh, well, would you do it for 40? You certainly wouldn't for 30, 20. Yeah, really, it's very odd. But leaves it at, okay, if there are 10 righteous people in the city, we're good. Now, we will say as an aside, negotiating that way with God may raise some difficult theological questions for us. But not that anyone in this room has ever tried negotiating with God about anything. Just saying, you know who you are. You know who you are. But our questions aren't the questions that the author is focused on. It would appear that after this restful meal, Abraham felt enough intimacy to challenge his guests, or felt enough boldness to push back a little bit. It's like the insights from the reading we heard by Henry Nouwen, that this hospitality had created a kind of free and open space, a space where the guest and the host bring new life to one another. The guests reveal the promise that they are carrying. Sarah will bear a child. Abraham becomes bold enough to argue to spare the lives of others. As much as I treasure this ancient theophany story, I sincerely wonder how realistic its portrayal of Abraham is. Now, the stories of Abraham were told and retold for generations. Scholars speculate that it was probably 1,000 years of oral tradition before these stories were written down. So I wonder if somehow over time, they began to portray a somewhat idealized portrait of a beloved and venerated ancestor. Think about it. The story says it was in the heat of the midday desert sun, Abraham was relaxing in the shade of his tent. Well, the story says Abraham more or less immediately jumped up and more or less fell over himself to care for these strangers. He was an old man, and it was hot. And yes, hospitality became the central ethic, but these strangers may not have been friendly. They could have come to steal, to violate, just like the neighbors in Sodom and Gomorrah. I wonder if Abraham was really that eager to take care of these strangers, particularly if there wasn't a recognition already that, by the way, this was God who showed up. I wonder if he might have maybe made that old man groan when he got up from the ground. I know I do when I get up out of my car seat. Ugh. I say that because his hospitality cost him something. It was inconvenient. He extended himself. He gave the best in the story of his food and his time and his energy. Hospitality cost him something. It was inconvenient for him to be hospitable right then and right there with those strangers. Thursday night, about 10 or 12 of us attended the lecture by Tim Wise at Portland Community College, Cascade Campus. I don't know if his lecture is still streaming, but it was really, he preached. My. Yeah. Yes. Yes, Lord. The author of White Like Me and a really well-known activist and author, he spoke on After Ferguson, white denial and the criminal justice system. There are so many things that came out of that. A number of us gathered at Nikki Johnson's afterwards, about 8 or 10 of us, and talked about sort of what we heard, what we felt, what we began to think, you know, what is MCC Portland's role in this? But for today, there was one quote that has just stuck with me ever since he said it. And this is in relation to these calls for racial justice. And he said, if we can't be inconvenienced by a call to justice, then we do not deserve the country we say we want to live in. If we can't be inconvenienced by a call to justice, then we do not deserve the country we live in. And when I, well, there you go. That's Tim Wise quoted from him. So. The part of it that really got me was this part. If we can't be inconvenienced by fill in the blank, there's a whole heck of a lot that we do not want to inconvenience us. You know, because it's, well, frankly, inconvenient. And it annoys us. And it might push us to change or give up or do something. And it's not just a call for justice. To provide hospitality can be inconvenient. It is inviting someone you don't know to sit next to you, inviting them for a cup of coffee, perhaps even inviting them into your home. It is inconvenient. Hospitality is essentially an expression of love, and loving someone can be inconvenient. If you really choose to love someone, that will require some inconveniences on your part. You may go places and do things that are not necessarily your first choice, but you do so out of love. It will cost something. It will cost you time. It will cost you resources. It will cost you emotionally some of your energy. Has anyone ever loved someone and found it inconvenient at times? However, if Abraham, if we cannot be inconvenienced, that revealing of the divine, that epiphany, indeed that theophany, where the very presence of God is made manifest. If we can't be inconvenienced, then God will walk right on by and we'll never know it. Those who told this story for generations upon generations knew the point when they were telling it. Whether Abraham knew it at the time or not, they knew that it was God who had come to visit in the guise of those three strangers. And whether or not Abraham felt inconvenienced. It became a story of the joy of welcome, of hospitality, because of what it meant. That free and open space allowed for the giving of the gift of the guest and the host. An encounter in which God is revealed.